Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's time for Wilmington Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, and welcome to Wilmington Business Radio. I'm your host, Anne Ravel Petcher, and in the studio today, I am so lucky to finally get to have Jonathan Rowe from Encino. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you, Anne. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been looking forward to this.
We are so excited to have you here. So those of you who don't know who Encino is, it probably means either you're not in banking, or you don't live in Wilmington, or you don't read the paper. Encino is one of the hottest things happening here in town, and we're really, really proud to have Jonathan with us today. Jonathan is the Director of Marketing and Research, which I find really scintillating, of this cloud-based banking operating system / software company. Is that a fair description?
You've done perfect. In fact, after we're done, hopefully you can come back to the office.
Okay,
and help us with sales.
a little bit of messaging going on here. So I think that one of the coolest things about Encino is literally starts when the company was started. Would you mind, before you really dig down deep into what Encino is, talking to me about how it got started?
Absolutely, and I agree. I think it's a great place to start. And it started, if everyone goes back to 2008, which many of us remember, sort of a dark period.
We're all hanging ourselves.
And if you think in that context, a bank in Wilmington, North Carolina, by the name of Live Oak Bank, was founded in 2008. And in fact, it was the last bank at the time to get chartered by the FDIC.
Wow.
Because of everything that was happening. And so if you imagine yourself starting a bank in the worst economic crisis that happened since the Great Depression, right? You know right away that you have to approach banking differently, that you have to be innovative in the technology you use. And so long story short, Chip Mahan, who is a Wilmington resident and revered in the banking and financial services industry for his innovation and his success over the years with many companies, did just that. And so they built Live Oak Bank using technology and a unique business model. And over time, as Live Oak became very successful as a bank, it became apparent that there were other banks in the country that were very interested in the technology, as Live Oak was literally the first bank in the country to operate fully on the cloud, if you will.
Wow.
And so in 2012, the technology was separated from Live Oak Bank and spun off as a brand new company called Encino.
Very cool. 2012, and that's when you came aboard too. Didn't you come on pretty early?
Yes, I joined in June of 2012 after the spring semester at UNC Wilmington. And at the time, there was about 10 of us.
Wow.
Our head of product and development engineering, Nathan Snell, was considered the first employee, is one of the architects behind the actual product. Pierre Naudé, who's our CEO, just another incredible industry veteran with a lot of experience, who's guided Encino just amazingly thus far, came on in March. And so you started putting some key people in place, and we are now at 77 people.
Wow.
In 2 years.
That's explosive.
It has gone very fast.
Especially for Wilmington. I mean, you see this obviously in the Bay Area all the time. We don't see this here a lot. So this is really exciting. So talk to me about that great technology. Let's get into the weeds here a little bit about what you do.
Oh, great. You have a marketing and research guy talking technology. Now I'm really nervous, Anne. So, I guess all of us interact with banks, right? There may be a number of listeners who work in banks or have had careers there. And when you think about banks, you generally have sometimes a love-hate relationship, right? You have a love relationship in that they're the keepers of your money, and hopefully they add to your money over time and mm-hmm. give you different products and services to help you with your financial planning. And sometimes you have a frustrating relationship, if you're dealing with a lot of paperwork for a loan or some of those processes, and it ends up taking 60 or 90 days. And so what's interesting about the, and I know I'm sort of backing into your technology question, is what's happened over time in banking is between the regulation and a lot of the older technology, if you will, that has been in use since the 70s, is you have processes and workflows and systems that are very inefficient and in many ways still very manual and paper-based. And so when we talk about the cloud, there's nothing earth-shattering about talking about the cloud these
right.
days, right? Everything is in the cloud. In mm-hmm. fact, the radio broadcast we're doing is in the cloud.
It is in the cloud.
which in and of itself is very innovative with your work. And so what Encino has done is really, become the next generation of an operating platform for banks to operate on that's in the cloud. And it really is I mean, obviously, we're very biased, excuse me, very passionate, but it truly revolutionizes banks going from very paper manual processes to, you know, where we, you know, to the future, which is everything is on the computer, everything is stored on the cloud securely, and the way people interact with the loan process and all of that makes things much more efficient. So how does that calculate back to customers and all of us is that when you go in and are dealing with loan applications and things like that, the whole process will be so much quicker, mm-hmm. and you won't have that intense paper experience. That is if you're working with a bank that uses nCino, of course.
Right, of course. So this is not the kind of bank technology that we see banks talking about to consumers. This is really a very B2B play. This is not here you can use your phone to take a picture of your check and have it automatically deposited. It's not about that, right? It's about how a bank does business.
You're spot on. And our CEO, Pierre Naudé, he coins it very well. I mean, ERP or enterprise resource planning has been very popular in manufacturing and a lot of other mm-hmm, industries right. for years. And you're spot on. It's the technology and the systems that run the back office, you know, run the operations. And ultimately, yeah, that is exactly what nCino does. So even though consumers may not interact directly with nCino, interacting with the bank indirectly, they'll receive the benefits and obviously the bank being much more productive and hopefully competitive in what they can offer you.
Yeah, so this is about improved efficiency for the bank so they can be more effective in the long run in the way they offer their services. Is that correct? Sort of taking the process out of the way, if you will, so they can be more effective at their day-to-day work.
Exactly. And I will reiterate, Anne, that you may be coming back to the office with us given your but you're spot on. The pillars of really what nCino offers to banks is, yeah, the efficiency. So you know, employees being more empowered and more able to access what they need to do their jobs and serve customers more effectively is there. Because what you have today is you have a lot of paper-based processes, you have a lot of pieces of technology. And this is where nCino gets really interesting, is a lot of traditional technology for banking was built by people who are programmers,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a room or a building somewhere.
Right.
Who have never been in banking, who don't understand how bankers work. And so what happens is you end up with all these little systems that don't work the way bankers want to work.
Right.
So that can make things very quickly more efficient. And then when you talk about the ability to close loans quicker, to be more successful, you know, when people shop around for loans with different banks, they often just look at the interest rate, right?
Sure, absolutely.
But what our system does is because you're able to collect more information on the relationship, you're able to offer more value beyond just an interest rate, right? So banks become more than just a number or a price consideration. It becomes more of a value add. So efficiency, the revenue growth offering, compliance. So banking is heavily regulated,
yeah.
And so we offer much greater not only management of regulation, and stop me if I start rambling. Obviously, you can tell I get pretty excited about this stuff. And let me just tell a quick anecdote around the regulation. So traditionally, every bank in the country gets examined by regulators.
Right.
So they come down, they spend a week, and it literally, for lack of a better word, can shut down a bank because they have to spend weeks, if not months, preparing all the loan documents. So you think...
Well, you don't mean literally shut down a bank.
I
don't want anyone to be afraid yeah. that just because their bank is going to be audited, it doesn't mean that the bank goes out of business or you can't get your money.
Yes, no, you're absolutely correct. But it does mean a lot of the employees are focused on preparing for the exam.
Absolutely.
And so all these loans, so if you think of a bank might have, I don't know, 50, 60,000 loans, every one of those loans is a giant loan file. And we have lots of great pictures of traditional loan files. And so every one of those files has to come out. They have to be verified that all the papers are in there, they're in the correct order, so that when the examiners come in and ask for Ann's loan file for a commercial loan in this document, they flip it open and it's right there. And so when you multiply all that paper and all that preparation, you can imagine issues are going to happen. And they do. And then after the regulators leave, and if you imagine a table with papers everywhere.
Then like my desk.
You're right. And so now you have to put them all back together.
Yeah, right.
And so... what's great about that story is with nCino, the regulators walk in and there's no paper. They sit in front of a computer, they bring up your loan file, they click on the document, and they look at it.
So tell me how the examiners looked at this when you first started bringing it to them that way. Were they overjoyed or were they a little nervous about that?
Yeah, I have to tread lightly here because obviously examiners are very, what's the right word? very particular about how they approach things and have a lot of processes that they follow. So I would say it helps the relationship between the examiner and the bank, because anytime you can make somebody else's job easier and make them more effective, I think it's a very positive experience. And so when you look at Live Oak Bank or look at some of our bank customers, you're seeing the value in that. And so, you know, there's nothing worse than a bank getting hit with, you know, some sort of violation. You know, it can cost them money. It can cost them a lot of different things. And so when you make that relationship so much better and you don't have those costs and some of those negative outcomes, it's a huge benefit.
This may or may not apply, but because it's in the cloud, does that mean that the examiner no longer has to physically do this inside the bank?
Fabulous question. So today, because this is, you know, again, it is really changing the way banks and the whole process works. Today, you still have examiners coming into the bank. Now, if you ask me to forecast or predict in the future, I think technology such as Encino will change that.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean? I mean, I can't imagine the amount of travel, right, that's involved with examiners mm-hmm. visiting every bank.
Sure.
And so, you know, as a government or a taxpayer, you can see how the efficiency just replicates around the industry. Examiners can now examine a bank from their desk, wherever that may be.
Isn't that just so cool?
I
just think that is so cool. Okay, now I'm being a nerd. So give us you've given us one example of how a bank might utilize your service. Can you give us another example of how a bank literally, when they first start using Encino, what are they going, oh my gosh, I didn't realize it was going to be so much easier now because of.
Sure. So another great question. So when you're dealing with loans, you know, you often have lawyers involved and third parties involved mm-hmm. in the loan process. And so the more people you add to a situation, the more, you know, paper you add, the more it slows it down. And so another example in specifically to loans is, you know, lawyers and third parties can now have secure access just to the part of the loan file they need to interact with.
Okay.
And so in the past, instead of having to FedEx or mail a loan file and email it as an attachment, and, you know, you can just, all of us have been through that.
Sure.
And you just see where the efficiency starts and the breakdowns and the errors can occur. The lawyer, no different than the examiner, goes in, you know, would just have access to a specific area of the loan, puts the document in, reviews it, and adds it back.
Does this mean I can get a loan faster?
It does. And since you've been asking for these anecdotes,
I think people, you know, understand things a little bit better when they can paint the picture for them. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've been able to shave days and hopefully soon months off the mm-hmm. loan closing time. And how does that translate? So let's, to your point earlier about us being a B2B seller, right?
Sure.
We're selling directly to banks. So Square One Bank, which is actually based in North Carolina in the Raleigh Research Triangle area, the CEO has they've sort of calculated that for every day Encino has reduced their loan closing time has added $100,000 to their bank's bottom line annually.
Wow.
And you know, at the end of the day, banks, you know, are in the business of not only helping and serving customers but being profitable themselves.
Certainly.
And so when you're able to both make a better experience and a quicker experience for the customer and be profitable doing it, again, you understand why this is pretty exciting stuff.
It is. It really is. Well, so you came over, if I remember correctly, you had been at UNCW.
Correct.
Correct. So tell me about that transition.
Yeah, that was interesting. You know, here I thought, and I was going to be an academic for a long period of time. I love teaching. I was running the Entrepreneurship Center
exactly.
at UNCW.
Mm-hmm.
So in many ways, I was supporting a lot of the great businesses and entrepreneurs here in town. And so it's interesting. It was obviously a big decision. You know, it's a very big lifestyle change and career change. And at the time, it, when you tell the story, people think, wow, there was a little bit of risk. I mean, there's 10 people in the company. You know, at the time, the company was burning a lot of money and didn't have a lot of money coming in. And so to just sort of walk away, and you know, for me, it was actually a very easy decision. And I say that for a couple of reasons. One, you know, anytime you're looking at businesses and you've been both working with businesses and done it yourself, you know, you kind of, there's I think three big areas you really look at. You know, first and foremost, you look at the team.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had known Chip Mahan, he had come in and spoken to my class a number
of times,
which was great. So, you know, I'd got to know him. And when I started looking at the initial team, the founding team that was with Encino, and you see Pierre Nade, you see Nathan Snow, you see Paul and Daniel, some of these folks, and you see both the experience and the energy and what their vision is for the company. And so you think, wow, these are people who are going to be successful, and I want to be around successful people. So you saw a very strong team initially. Secondly, you saw an industry that needed this, for lack of a better word.
Right.
I mean, we've signed 40 banks, which, you know, on its own is just a number, but we are probably the fastest growing financial services company ever in terms of how many banks have adopted our technology.
Wow.
In 2 years.
How many banks have?
So at 40 today, our expectation is we'll probably double that by the end of the year. And banks, and I know I'm getting a little off track, but this is not an easy decision for banks. I mean, when you're talking about bringing a technology that changes the way all their workflow, mm-hmm. you know, takes place, where you take their efficient processes and adapt them into the system and sort of remove the inefficiency, it changes a lot of things. And so because of that, they don't take these decisions very lightly. And so they spend a lot of time, as they should, doing due diligence on the product, mm-hmm. you know, speaking with some of our other customer banks before making that decision. So I say that because, you know, 40 banks in 2 years for you know, a young company is pretty big for us. So back to the point was, you know, you kind of see that. You know, I saw the product and I saw the need for it and I thought, my gosh, this is really going to be something big. And at the end of the day, the last piece was really realizing that the only thing that could stop nCino from not being successful would be the people. Because we make poor decisions or did the wrong things. And because, as I mentioned, I felt so strongly about the team and now the people we've added, I thought, my God, how often do you have a 100% chance of being successful?
Oh, it lands in your lap, right? It just lands in your lap. That's fabulous. Well, and you had, frankly, a lot of exposure to team development and entrepreneurial endeavors while you were at UNCW, you know, what's now the CIE, but was then the Center for Entrepreneurship. Is that correct? So you had a lot of exposure to how people were putting their plans together and how the businesses were coming together. And so the value obviously became clear to you of the people.
Yes.
How does that translate to you as a marketer?
Ooh, that's a great question.
I would assume that this has, I'm going to give you a second to think about that because my assumption is that as you market, just from the things that I know about you from around the community, you're very people-centric in your marketing. The fact that you have done podcasting for so long, the ability to get the word out, it seems as though there's a relationship there between the focus on the team and your success as a marketer. And so within nCino, how does that play out?
Yeah. So thank you for giving me a couple extra seconds there to think about that. I think in a couple ways, you know, first and foremost, whenever you're marketing and selling a product, you know, when you first start out, you sort of define the brand. You know, what do you want your company to represent? And a lot of that is through your marketing material.
Absolutely.
You know, but very quickly, what happens is the marketplace, your potential clients look at what your marketing is saying, and then they look at how they're interacting with the company, the people, the mm-hmm. product. Mm-hmm. And if those things aren't aligned, you very quickly lose your brand. And so to your point, you're spot on. It is about the people. And so it was very, I don't want to say it was easy, but I was very fortunate to come out at a time when we had some great people at the company who founded it, but we also had a lot of bankers. And I'm not a banker. And so
within the company,
mm-hmm. yeah, which I think is one of our advantages, as I mentioned. So we were able to very quickly promote ourselves as, you know, listen, banks are tired of having software built by people who don't, I mean, none of us like buying things that are being sold by somebody who doesn't know what it's like to be us or to use the product mm-hmm. as it should be used. So very quickly we positioned it as this is something different, you know, and then there's the efficiency and the regulation, all those other pieces around it. But the great thing about the brand was we put that out in the marketplace, and that's what we are, is half of our company are bankers or mm-hmm. were former bankers, and the rest are technologists and some weird outliers like me. And so, and we are absolutely passionate not only about the innovation of our product, but customer service and success. And I'm always astounded, even in today's world, that you always hear customers first, and you hear a lot of these great mantras, but there's still a lot of companies that don't get that right.
Right.
You know, and so here we are promoting our brand and focusing on our customer support and success, and we backed it up. And so now our marketing equals who we are. And now who we are is defining our brand. And now the market is telling us this is who you are. And so now it becomes sort of a great building
process. It's a big
cycle. Yeah.
And you get to reevaluate that every once in a while and figure out, are they telling us who we are and is that correct?
Right, exactly.
So 2 years under your belt there, Have you had to sort of reevaluate some of your marketing tactics?
Absolutely. It's interesting. You know, one of the things when you come over from academia is in my case, I hadn't had a lot of business experience before sort of going the whole academic route where you spend a lot of time in education and research, is you sort of build up a knowledge base of what's in books, you know, and what you hear anecdotally. And the one thing I think where I've not necessarily switched, but learned a lot about marketing is, so I was just talking about brand and some of those things and the importance of building those early on. But at the end of the day, marketing is all about sales. And, you know, for anyone who...
Say it again. Say it again. Come on.
Marketing is all about sales.
Thank you.
And so, you know, for anyone in marketing and folks listening, if you can't define how, whether you're going to do an advertisement, whether you're going to do an email campaign or a newsletter, if you can't articulate how you're going to both measure the sales or the prospects that you're going to drive from that and then measure success based on that, then you're just doing marketing for the sake of marketing, right? And you're not going to be successful.
Right. So you talked about starting when you started being so small. How, I assume your marketing budget wasn't as big as it is today.
If our CEO is listening, it's still quite small, actually.
Well, we'll see if we can alter that. He just needs more money to be a little bit more effective. No, but when you're on a shoestring, what kinds of tips and things did you learn during that period that were maybe more real than what you were teaching in the classroom?
Yeah, another great question. And I would back up to sort of the humor I was putting forth. And I would say even today, if you came to me and said, hey, we'd like to double your marketing budget.
We'd like to double your marketing budget.
Right. My response would be that's great, but I think we can use the money better elsewhere. And the reason I would say that is because marketing isn't necessarily about how much you spend. It's where you spend it and what you do with it. And we've probably found that a lot of our most successful marketing efforts aren't money expensive. They're just time intensive.
Right.
So we do a monthly webinar series.
Great.
On different topics around regulation, SBA loans, you know, things that matter to our clients and in our market. And we generate a lot of interest in those, you know, don't require time. It requires a lot of, you know, blood, sweat, and tears building a database of prospects, which is critical. Putting together a webinar that matters, designing a nice email to send out, sending it out, following up with phone calls, driving people to the webinar, and then following up with them afterwards and trying to get them to see a product demo and then work in the sales process. So, you know, things like that are time intensive. And so to your point, it's not about how much you spend. It's really about, you know, measuring and testing things. But in a large part nowadays, it's about the inexpensive things and doing those right.
It's interesting because automated marketing is like all the buzz, right? Everybody talks about how to do marketing automation and what marketing automation tools are most successful. And yet what I'm hearing, and especially for B2B, we hear about marketing automation for B2B in a big way. And yet what your experience has been is it's much more touch, much more high touch than simply automating.
Yeah, it's almost, we use the analogy, it's like a steady drumbeat. You know, it's just that tap, 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 whether it's a webinar, whether it's we Sarah Mallory, who leads our PR, mm-hmm. does a phenomenal job. We average about 2 press releases a month, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, announcing a customer we've signed, whether it's announcing, you know, we just hired a senior banker, Ted Parker, to join our company, announcing that. There's always something that we have that we're announcing. And so that's another piece of the puzzle. And so what you find, I was actually a colleague of mine, we were in Seattle for a conference a couple of weeks ago.
Isn't that a great town?
Yes.
To interrupt, but gotta say.
Although the interesting part of that, Anne, was it was warmer in Seattle than it was in Wilmington,
which made
me think twice, right?
Anyway, sorry, you were in Seattle for a conference.
So the point is, there were a lot of banks and people we had never met before, mm-hmm. obviously, but they had heard of nCino, you know, and they couldn't quite remember, was it something, an email they got, but they knew about us, and so again, it's that steady drumbeat, but using different methods. And the other thing is people love to buy, you know, we just, that's kind of in our nature or something along those lines, but people hate to feel sold to.
Yeah.
And I think that's another part of the marketing is you've got to learn to promote and go through the sales process without making it feel like you're, you know, outwardly and openly and almost forcefully selling your product to somebody.
So how many banks are there? Do you have a rough idea how many banks there are that you can sell to?
So great question. There are roughly 7,600 total banks in the U.S. Our target market slims that down a little bit to about 2,000 banks. And we slim that down. We stay away from some of the larger banks like Bank of America, Wells Fargo, not because they couldn't potentially be great customers. It's just the sales cycle is so much longer because there's a lot more layers and process involved. And the other piece is the impact we can make with community banks, which are sort of the $10 billion and down level, is so much stronger. You know, larger banks, it would take a much longer for them to see value from the product, where our current banks, I mean, they literally see value within the first 30 to 60 days of using the product and getting settled with it. And that can help them survive. We're losing a lot of community banks in this country just because the larger banks are able to outcompete because they just have more resources and money. And I think it's very important, you know, as not only a country, but as an economy, that it's almost like small business, that these smaller community banks that are there to serve the community they're in. I mean, you know, you think of some of the ones in the area here, that they are able to be successful and even outcompete some of the larger ones. And and that's, again, another piece of what I think our product can do for them.
Cool. So when we think of this product, first of all, it's sort of labeled on your site and in your press releases as an operating system. This is not like a traditional technology operating system where it sits underneath like Windows, for example. It's not like that.
It is not, yeah. So the name, go ahead, sorry. No, it's called the bank operating system. And you know, it's always interesting. You spend so much time, what's the name of the company going to be? What's the name of the product? And it's you think at the time it's going to be the most important decision you've ever made. And you also are making it with a lot of unknowns. When we decided to call the product the bank operating system, we were a little uncertain about, you know, what's that going to mean to people. But what was important to us from a bank perspective, when you say operating system to banks, they don't think of the traditional Windows or Mac-based operating system. You know, they think of the software that runs their bank. And in the banking industry, you have something called a bank core, which are these, you know, traditional green screen, you know, 1970s programmed with a language that I'm not Pascal might, I don't know, the tech people would know
Linux,
what they're like.
It's Linux.
Yeah, right. but the point is that they've, for so long, these systems are sitting there, and we don't replace these systems, but we sit on top of them and are able to actually, so we're actually extracting.
Now that's a challenge.
It is. And that's why half of our company are these technology geniuses who are able to take some of these older systems and integrate them with our very advanced, you know, next generation type system.
Which leads me to my next question. You have potentially 2,000 customers, and you're going to be at 80 already in just 3 years, probably by the end of this year. You're going to get to that 2,000 pretty quickly. What happens then?
Wow. Well, you're very bullish on us, which so it took us a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to get to where we are now. So, no, it's a great question. I think a couple things. One, we're starting to get some traction and exposure and growth in the credit union space, which is very interesting. So again, not being a banker nor somebody who is, you know, intimately familiar with credit unions, that's another very interesting and growing area in terms of a financial institution, if you will. Again, there's a lot of them in the area here, and they're all over the country. And so a lot of the value we can provide to banks, we can also provide to credit unions just a little differently, because credit unions, interestingly enough, they're nonprofits. And so it's a very different mindset.
Different ball of wax,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And so they are gung-ho, you know, even possibly more so than banks at serving their customers or what they call their members. Because that's, as a nonprofit, that's what they're in the business to do. And so what our product enables them to do in a lot of cases is, be more efficient. But more importantly, our product, we're partnered with Salesforce.com.
Oh, cool.
Which is the leading CRM system in the world. And we use a lot of their platform and their CRM system.
And those of you who are listening don't know what a CRM is. That's customer relationship management.
Thank you. And so with credit unions who, in a lot of cases, are trying to grow and increase loan types and business loans to their members, having a marketing system and a customer relationship management system that they can use that is the leading one and integrated with our whole end-to-end operating system has a big dramatic impact on them. So we're really starting to see some traction in the credit union space, which opens up, you know, a whole another 1,000-plus credit unions. And we're also, interestingly enough, is we just recently partnered with PwC, PricewaterhouseCoopers, which obviously is one of the top.
That's interesting. Yeah, tell us about that partnership.
Yeah, so they're one of the top consulting companies in the world. They consult with all industries, and naturally they work with some of the larger banks on the consulting level. And so working with them is interesting in that because they interact very much so with the larger banks, that will likely be the way for us to start working with some of the larger banks. Because as PwC comes in to work on projects such as efficiency and regulation, they're going to be looking for tools, you know, to offer their clients. And so that's what we're seeing as some of the market growth.
So let's talk about corporate growth. How many people work there now, did you say?
77.
77. So where do you find your up-and-comers?
Maybe there's some listening to the radio right now. But Wilmington, I think, is one of these untapped gems for talent. And I think one of the great things about my prior role with the Entrepreneurship Center and the university is both working with a lot of young people and seeing some of the businesses in town. And so I guess I would sort of answer the question three ways. One, the young people in this town who graduate from whether it's Cape Fear Community College or UNC Wilmington and want to stay in Wilmington and end up working at, you know, jobs that are probably of a lesser quality than the skills they have is tremendous. And it's always been a frustration, I think, to a lot of us in the region.
Agreed.
And so now we're able to bring in these young people. And I cannot tell you how fulfilling and proud it is to bring in somebody who graduated in May of last year. We've probably brought in 12 people who have graduated in the last year and see them come in and contribute so quickly and bring so much fresh energy and ideas and different ways of doing business. You know, one of the things I've realized with working with a lot of young people is it makes you feel old.
You guys, this is the bad part about radio. You have no idea how young this guy is.
But the young people have brought so much and they've added, and they're going to be our future leaders at Encino. And so they're going to grow with the company. And that is one part of this. Another part is that there's so many people in Wilmington who, you know, whether they moved here as a trailing spouse, or they've, you know, they took a job here and didn't work out or any number of reason, you have a lot of other people who are talented here. And so, you know, when you start putting together the story of Encino, we are a great place to work. I mean, again, I'm somewhat biased, but I don't think other than Live Oak, there's a better company in this town to be a part of than Encino. And so you start attracting the best people in the region who want to come work for us.
So it sounds like you're going to stay here.
Absolutely. We are committed to Wilmington. In fact, interesting enough, Monday afternoon, there is a groundbreaking right next door. For anyone who's ever had a chance to visit Live Oak Bank, they opened a new building about a year ago.
It is gorgeous.
Oh,
it is gorgeous.
Stunning. And again, it's sort of a testament to Chip's vision for the region. And he wants to build a campus in that sort of area, which is on Independence Shipyard, kind of behind the Verizon building, for those in Wilmington. And we're going to be breaking ground on the next building.
Oh, wow.
On Monday afternoon.
You are?
Yes.
Oh, that's so exciting.
That's like 5 days away. And so this next building is going to house more of Live Oak because they've already outgrown their building.
Wow.
Because they're also growing very quickly. And it's going to house Encino. And
that's
so, yeah.
So same sort of architecture and everything that they have? I'm just curious, because it seems it creates a different sort of New Wilmington kind of feel when you go out there. Can you comment on what they're thinking about?
I don't want to give it away.
Secret.
Yes, I want to leave it as a surprise. I know that's, I don't want to let anyone down, but it's going to take about probably 15, 16 months. It's going to be a little different than the Live Oak Bank building in terms of the look and the design, but it's going to be as stunning as the Live Oak Bank building.
Oh,
so
very cool. Oh, that's really exciting. Okay, what did I neglect to ask you during this interview that you're just aching to tell me?
Ooh, wow. My favorite color, ice cream flavor.
Let's see, blue, pineapple nut chip.
I think one of the things, and I know you have a very diverse audience. I think what you're seeing in a lot of industries is that, you know, technology is becoming more accessible and easier to build companies around. Mm-hmm. And so by that, I mean, you know, traditionally, whenever you think of startups, you think of Silicon Valley and even RTP in Austin, Texas, and the Boston corridor. I think that dynamic's changing a little bit. You know, you still have a lot of the ecosystems where you have venture capital. But what you see with Encino, so Encino's in Wilmington, North Carolina, and we're, you know, going to be here. We're committing and we're going to grow in this area. We're one of the fastest growing tech companies. You know, we've raised $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
We've had venture capitalists get on planes and show up at our door from Silicon Valley in Wilmington. And my point with that is I think a lot of the barriers to starting companies based on geographic regions is because of technology is changing. And I think for this area, I mean, having been in the Entrepreneurship Center in UNCW, I'm so passionate about our region and my belief that we can really become a hub for entrepreneurial activity. And I think all the dynamics happening in a lot of industries, as it is with banking and Encino, can happen anywhere.
Well, we want to definitely thank you personally for your personal commitment to Wilmington and to helping businesses grow here, and certainly to Encino as a whole for its commitment to the region and providing high-value jobs to the area. So thank you very much for that, and thanks for being on the show today. We've really enjoyed having you.
Thank you, Anne, and I just would like to point out that you are part of this as well, contributing with all the work you're doing with Business Radio X, so thank you.
Well, our pleasure. We're having a blast doing this, I have to tell you. And so for Business Radio X and Wilmington Business Radio, this is Anne Revelle-Petcher. Until next time.